This is Lawrence Tuning, and these are my 88 friends.
Me and my 88 friends. Me and my 88 friends. I will sing you a song that will help me along. They're my one man band. I'm the number one fan. Me and my 88.
Thank you for joining us again for Me and My 88 Friends. This is Lawrence Tuning, and this is episode 118. I'm calling this episode, Have You Seen Jesus Revolution? That's referring to a very popular movie that hit the theaters a week ago. It defied expectations of bringing in double the amount of people that they predicted, and everybody in the Christian community seems to be talking about it. So we're going to talk about it. I want to start this show tonight with a song I wrote called U.S. Americans, and it deals with the need for another national Great Awakening. Top of the pile. We're Americans. We've been number one since before we can even recall. The richest, the strongest in the history of the world. The wonder of them all. And I'm glad to be an American. I wouldn't want to be from anywhere else. But if we get to the point where we don't need God, years are in the past for us, America. We're Americans. We love our fun in the sun. We spend our money long before we get paid. We're Americans. We love football and guns and 4th of July parade. We're Americans. We're starting to drift. The mood is beginning to shift. We're moving away from an earlier faith and closer to the edge of the cliff. Oh, I'm glad to be an American. I wouldn't want to be from anywhere else. But if we get to the point where we don't need God, the best years are in the past. For us America. I'm not trying to be popular. That option already came and went. So I'll just say it and let the chips fall where they may. I think it's time for us all to repent. God makes it plain, He makes it clear as day. If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray, if they'll learn from their past mistakes and follow me again, if they'll turn from their wicked ways, I'll come and heal the land. Oh, I'm glad to be an American. I wouldn't want to be from anywhere else. And if we turn back to God, I do believe the best years are still ahead for us Americans.
Us Americans.
Us Americans.
Us Americans.
U.S. America.
Us America. Things have been slowly changing where I live here in South Carolina. Although you can still see flecks of brown in the grass, it's slowly turning green. Things are beginning to bud and blossom. And it's clear by now that winter is on the wane and full-blown spring is around the corner. I was thinking about a verse in Song of Solomon, which I want to read to you. This is chapter 2, verses 11 through 13. See, the winter is past. The rains are over and gone. Flowers appear on the earth. The season of singing has come. The cooing of doves is heard in our land. The fig tree forms its early fruit. The blossoming vines spread their fragrance. Arise, come, my darling, my beautiful one, come with me. Well, lately I have felt that in the spiritual world, the same thing is starting to happen in America. I don't think I could have said that even a month ago. A month ago, I felt things were so dark, and I would pray and cry out and say, God, will we ever see revival? But in the last month, unexpectedly, reports came from Kentucky about a spontaneous outpouring at Asbury University. It started at the end of a chapel service. People just kept singing. And it went on for over 2 weeks, around the clock. And it took the world by storm all over social media. Well, last weekend, a movie premiered all over the country called Jesus Revolution. What this movie dealt with was the powerful youth revival that broke out in Southern California. It deals with a church in Southern California, Calvary Chapel. And it's basically the story of three characters. One of them is the pastor of a dying church named Chuck Smith. Another character is a hippie named Lonnie Frisbee, who had accepted Christ and had a gift for preaching. And Chuck Smith and Lonnie Frisbee met each other, and through their contact and their dialogue with each other, Chuck Smith ended up doing a very radical thing. He opened his church up to hippies who came in with their bare feet and their jeans and their informal style of worship, and he embraced them, and he changed the whole face of the church, he, along with other people who embraced the same philosophy. Worship changed all over America. Dress changed. And for better or worse, some think it's worse, but contemporary Christian music and contemporary worship came to America to stay. The third character in this story is probably the main character, and that is Greg Laurie. And Greg Laurie is a well-known evangelist and pastor now. He's one of my favorite preachers. He has preached one particular sermon that totally revolutionized my whole approach to ministry, called She Did What She Could. But this is the story of his conversion. I'm glad a friend told me that it was going to deal mainly with Greg Laurie's conversion to Christ, because I think otherwise I would have expected a large documentary-type movie on all the different aspects of the Jesus Movement. I'm a Jesus Movement fan because it changed my life. So I thought for this episode I would call my good friend Dale Yancey, who was part of that whole scene, who was part of what was going on in the movie in California. He had a ringside seat to the events of this movie. So I want us to welcome our friend Dale Yancey, who now lives in Paducah, Kentucky.
Jesus is the one that makes me never, ever want to spend another day without him. fools me every time I turn around that I could never doubt him.
I'm so glad to have on the other end of the line my good friend, Dale Yancey. We met each other in 1972 in Burlington, Vermont. Dale's a very interesting guy. He's been a cartoonist, a youth pastor in Vermont, a pastor in California and New Hampshire, and now he lives in the big city of Paducah, Kentucky.
It's flyover country.
But he's becoming really involved in rediscovering the Jewish roots of our faith. This is a wonderful thing. But I've got you on the show today, Dale, for one reason.
Okay.
You know, there's this movie out that seems to be taking the Christian community by storm called Jesus Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you've seen it. I've seen it. But you were living in California and were really right in the middle of things at the time this movie takes place. And so I was just wanted to talk to you about your life a little bit and the movie. What do you think of the movie? Was it realistic as far as your memory serves you from when you were in the middle of things back then?
Yeah, you know what? I mean, I think the movie was very well done, very well made. I thought the acting was great. The kid Joel, who played Greg Laurie, did a really good job. So I liked all that. I felt like, and I know that this is so often the case, I felt like they telescoped time or whatever, or compressed time because of to fit things in. And it's like, I don't ever recall Lonnie Frisbee being under the big at the tent. We were in the chapel. We were in the small chapel for like 2+ years. And they didn't show this, but the chapel was a little bit bigger than what they showed there, and actually nicer. It was actually an adobe type look, and I don't know if it's still, but it was once they left that chapel, it became the Maranatha bookstore. But
oh, really?
But the place was packed out, and it was a shag. It was like a greenish yellow shag carpeting. They didn't have
that. I wanted to ask you about the shag carpet because
yeah, it was a greenish yellow shag carpeting that they had. Greenish yellow. It was kind of ugly, but it's like no one even cared.
In the movie, one of the deacons or whatever.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, said we don't want these hippies coming in here because they're going to mess up our beautiful new shag carpet.
Yeah. And although that carpet didn't look like a shag carpet.
Well, is it true that Chuck Smith actually washed the people's feet before they went in? That was in the movie, you know.
That may have been because that was right at the very beginning. And when I first went there, and of course we would drive 45 minutes from South Bay to get there. And so, I mean, you know, fighting traffic and everything else. When I first went there, it was like, gosh, it was somewhere in early 69, mid 69. And they'd just been going for not very long. So he'd probably already done the foot washing, and all the adults that are going to leave. And when I went there, I mean, it was wall to wall people, young people.
Okay.
And Lonnie Frisbee had just shown up. I mean, I don't think he'd been, I mean, we heard about him and we went to see him, but I don't think he'd been there all that long either. I remember at one of his Bible studies, he told us that he learned how to read, that he was dyslexic growing up and couldn't read, and that he learned how to read by reading Good News for a Modern Man. He said, God taught me how to read, you know?
Yeah.
He had this big smile on his face. You know, there was like, with Lonnie, what was so charismatic about him is there's like this childlike look, you know, and an innocence and a joy and an honesty. It's like it was all rolled into one, and like he was a real deal, and he did a good job teaching the word to the best that he knew it. And the crazy stuff, well, not the, I don't say crazy. I mean, the fact him going around laying hands on people, I don't ever recall seeing that. But I say, you know, out of all my times there, I was at maybe eight or ten of his Bible studies.
Let me stop and let's reverse for just a little bit so people kind of get to know who you are. You grew up in Southern California near Los Angeles, right?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. And we had you on the show a few months ago, maybe a year ago, and it's a great, I hope people will go back and hear the whole thing. But your testimony, if I recall, you got saved at a Billy Graham, at the Billy Graham Crusade in Los Angeles at the Los Angeles Coliseum, right?
That's right. Yep.
And I remember you said that you went with a youth group or some young people, and they were all giggling and talking, and you got up and left, didn't you, and went to the very top seat so you could zero in on what he was saying.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got saved that night. You gave your life to Jesus that night. How old were you?
14.
14 years old. Okay, and you were going to a church at the time, right?
Yeah, a Baptist church, American Baptist Church.
Okay. So if you were 14 years old, that would be around
1963.
Okay. So fast forward to 69. How did you first find out about Calvary Chapel and what was going on in Costa Mesa?
Well, let me back up before that. On December the 12th, I think it was, there's part of me wants to say December 11th, but I think it was December 12th, 1969, we had the first March for Jesus in California, and probably the first March for Jesus in the United States. It was on Sunday afternoon, and 10,000 of us marched down Hollywood Boulevard, and we marched down Hollywood Boulevard. It was pretty awesome. I don't even know if there's any videos or anything of it, but we marched down Hollywood Boulevard. And while we're marching down, I'm marching alongside this guy. I thought he was a guy, maybe, with long blonde hair,
yeah.
You know? And turns out I didn't even know who he was. But all of a sudden, when we get to Hollywood High School for like a rally and everything, he's up there on the platform singing, you know, and someone said that was Larry Norman. So that was my first introduction to Larry Norman. And he's there at Hollywood High. So this is 69. I think he just had left his secular group, People or whatever. And he had just recorded Upon This Rock on Capitol Records.
Really?
Yeah. And that was like, Upon This Rock was probably the first real Jesus rock album.
Yes, it was.
Ever, with real production value and everything else. I mean, it was very well done.
He was flying on the cover. I remember the cover.
Exactly.
He was flying on the cover, like Superman.
Yep.
I remember that song, Walking.
That was pretty awesome.
Yep.
And while we're walking, they're handing out this newspaper, the Hollywood Free Paper as well. And I'm seeing it for the first time. I think that actually might have been the very first issue. And the artwork was done by a cartoonist by the name of Lance Bowen. Interesting. I think they show Lance there at the house because, Greg walks in, Lonnie walks in and he says, "Hey, Lance." And Lance is there doing some kind of cartoon at a table, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And so that Lance must have been staying at their house, which was interesting thing. That was an outgrowth of Calvary Chapel. They had so many kids coming to the Lord who were coming off drugs and hippies, everything else. And Calvary Chapel opened up a whole bunch of homes, commune type homes where they could live and get established in the faith, you know, and also learn how to work at a job and all that. And so Calvary Chapel had several homes around in the Orange County, LA area. But anyway, that was my first thing is December 12th, 1969, the March for Jesus was, and I always say that I think that might've been the very beginning of the Jesus movement in the whole United States, that March for Jesus down Hollywood Boulevard.
Well, Dale, let me just throw in here, if anybody's listening to this podcast and you haven't seen the movie, it's about the decision by Chuck Smith to let hippies come to his church as they were. They didn't have to dress up or wear a necktie. He welcomed them, and it really changed the face of the youth in America, really, what he did. Because suddenly our generation, the baby boomers, I think began to own, take ownership of walking with the Lord. We wrote our own new kinds of music and new style of worship and all of that. So that's what the movie's about. But I had a friend who told me that one thing she disagreed with the movie about, and I want to know what you think, was that at one point someone says in the movie the movement started at Calvary Chapel. And this person's understanding was, yeah, part of the movement did. But, I mean, there were people left out of the movie, like Larry Norman, like you say, and other things like that. So I don't think Calvary Chapel was the only thing, was the first thing, was it? Or was it that changed everything?
69. You know what? I think it was a confluence of events. Right around that same time, houses were starting to spring up. In fact, I think I was part on staff at a coffee house in Hermosa Beach, California, and we were doing that before I ever went to Calvary Chapel.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That, you know, Calvary Chapel was probably the most influential, but
yes, it was. I think the most, exactly. All the music that came out of it. I mean, I was there on nights. The first night that Love Song was introduced and sang, I was there when Debbie Kerner would sing, her songs. And then all of a sudden, a few weeks later, she's singing alongside Ernie Rettino, and they're doing a duet together, right?
Yeah.
And little be known to them that down the road, they get married and actually start a whole new ministry to kids.
Yeah.
So, and okay. Country Faith, Tom Stipe and Country Faith, and Blessed Hope. Oh, there's just so many groups. And any night that you went to Calvary, well, especially on Monday nights with Lonnie, and then the nights that Chuck sang, you had a good chance, or after a while, Tom Stipe also taught there, you'd have a chance of hearing not only the Word of God being taught, but also hearing a half hour or more of music from a group that maybe was singing for the very first time.
So tell the audience what you said Love Song's original name was before they came to Christ.
Flat Coke. and Chuck Girard will tell you that perfectly describes where their lives were at. They were known as Flat Coke. Oh, I'll tell you.
I don't like Flat Coke.
I don't either. Who does? Gosh.
Love Song is featured in that movie, and you actually heard them a lot, right, when you went there?
Yeah, a lot. Yeah.
Okay. What caused you to go there the first time you ever? How did you find out about Calvary Chapel if you lived 45 minutes away or whatever?
It was mentioned. It was in the Hollywood Free Paper, and actually when you would go to Calvary Chapel for a Bible study, they'd be handing out the Hollywood Free Paper before the Bible study started. So the Hollywood Free Paper is all throughout the whole chapel. But the how did I hear about it? We were at our Baptist church. We had a hippie. We had a long-haired. He looked very much like Alani and Leon. And Leon came to our church. And Leon, I think, was the one that basically said, "You guys, we've got to get out to Calvary Chapel and see what God's doing there."
I remember Leon. I remember him, of course.
Of course you do. Of course you do. So we went. I think he's the one that actually was instrumental in our first two or three trips out there. So we went out to check it out. And of course, you go out there and you're just amazed by everything going on. The other thing I want to share is you'd go out there and like 2-3 weeks later, you go out again, and they've already opened up the side and incorporated part of the patio, and it's now indoors with carpeting so that it can, and another pew in there so that it can seat another 150 people or whatever, right? They did that at least twice, you know, basically opening up and trying to expand, incorporate some of the patio. And then there's a point where they could no longer expand any further. And the, and then they're jamming everyone in. Every square inch. I mean, we always said if a fire marshal ever stopped in, they kick us all out because we're breaking every kind of law in the book, you know.
Did you start going early on when they were first moving into the new way?
Yeah. I think they'd only been there a few months when I started going.
And you went a lot of times, huh?
A lot. Yep. In fact, and then from there we were attending when they moved into the tent a couple of years, and it was times the size of the tent in the movie. It was at least three times, and it was huge, and it would be packed out, and we'd be going out there on Sunday nights, and Chuck on Sunday nights would teach for 2 hours through 10 chapters in whatever book he was in. He'd spend almost 2 hours of teaching. And I'll tell you, it was awesome. He had like a photographic memory. He could quote all these stats, scientific things, all these major illustrations, whatever, from science or from the astronomy or whatever. And he just pulled them right off the top of his head. He just knew it. He had it.
So how would you compare Lonnie Frisbee's preaching to Chuck Smith's teaching?
I don't know if it's you that said it or some. This week someone said people initially came for Lonnie, but they stayed around for Chuck.
That's what Greg Laurie said.
All right, okay, and they stayed around for Chuck, and they were never disappointed. I mean, basically, no one went to a Chuck Smith teaching and said, "Oh, too bad, Lonnie's not here." People loved Chuck, Daddy Chuck, you know, Papa Chuck. They called him like a father figure. But more than that, his teaching was so down to earth, and it was he just was so good as far as bringing the word home. And he had such great illustrations and examples and everything else, life examples. And it just brought his teaching alive. I do remember, interesting, one night, this happened a lot, but this was in the tent on a Sunday night. There was a girl, and she was like sitting near the front, and she got up like three or four times and got and moved and walked down the aisle, the center aisle, to the back of the tent, and then would come right back to her place. She did it like three or four times. And like on the third or on the fourth time, whatever, Chuck says, he said, "Ushers, do not allow her to come back in, seat her in the back when she comes back," you know? And he gave the message loud and clear. I mean, this was such a disruption.
Yeah.
And he probably did that on numerous occasions. I just saw it that one time. But I thought, you know, he was not about to allow this girl to disrupt. I mean, it's one thing you have to go to the bathroom or whatever you got to do, but it's like to come right back into the front, you know, when you could have easily got a seat or be standing in the back, you know?
Did you ever meet Chuck Smith?
I met him just one time. And you know who introduced me to him? Was Pat Boone.
Pat Boone did.
Yeah, because
Pat was in the middle of things too back then.
I'd interview Pat Boone for radio. I was at his home with his whole family and all that. And then I was also in his office. He'd just come back from playing tennis at the time. And so it was that one night that I was at Calvary Chapel, and it was a chapel. It was not the circus tent. It was the chapel. And Papoon's there at the door with Chuck Smith. And I don't even know how, but I mean, Boone recognized me and he just said, "Chuck, you know, do you know Dale Yancey? This is my good friend, Dale Yancey," you know? And he introduced me to Chuck Smith and shook hands. And that was my only time meeting him.
And was he down to earth?
Yeah. Yeah. He was awesome. You know, when we wanted to get his blessing before we left to go to Vermont, somehow we couldn't get in to see Chuck, but we got to see his associate, Romaine. So Romaine met with us, you know, and we told Romaine what God had shown us, everything else. And Romaine prayed with us and gave, you know, a blessing upon us.
Great. Did you ever meet Greg Laurie?
I did. We were...
Because I know he was a cartoonist, so were you, you rivals?
Yeah, he submitted his cartoons to the Hollywood Free Paper before I ever did. And Greg and I, we were walking. We're both college students. We were walking together on Harbor High campus there in Fullerton. I think it was to a concert. I think Josh McDowell or somebody is going to speak. And we were walking to it. And I just met him. And that was my only time meeting him and talking with him, you know, was then there. And he knew that I was, at that point, I think I was submitting artwork to the Hollywood Free Paper as well. So I think he knew about that, you know. So that was about it. That was my only time meeting Greg Laurie.
Did you ever meet Lonnie Frisbee?
Never.
Uh-huh.
Nope.
Now, tell me if this is right. Lonnie Frisbee really didn't preach a long time there, right? I know that they had the rift, and of course we know his life took a few other turns throughout his life after that, but he didn't really preach there for years, right? Wasn't it?
In fact, that's where I felt like they made it sound like, to my knowledge, because we were there almost at the very beginning when they moved into the tent. Interesting thing is, they bought this big circus tent, and like I say, it's like three times. It was like a Ringling Brothers barn. It was like a circus tent that you have at the Ringling Brothers circus. It was huge.
Yeah.
All right. It was like three times what they showed in the movie. So and like 2,000 people were inside of it, and we were there almost at the very beginning of being in the circus tent. And interesting thing is, they were able to do all that because they sold a corner plot of their land to Mobil Oil to put in a gas station. And the money from selling that piece of land to Mobil Oil for a gas station paid for buying the tent and paid for the construction of their new sanctuary, the new auditorium. And they never had to take up an offering.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, Dale, this is so interesting to me. I thought of you when they showed a news clip, I think, of the Hollywood Free Paper and them passing those out. And you were the cartoonist. I thought of you. Well, Dale Yancey might have had a cartoon in that very paper they showed on the clip.
You know, I may have, because it went by so fast. And I just got an email today from a guy who's from UC Santa Barbara who's a journalist and wanting to write a story article on this whole thing, you know, so and all. So we'll see. But it's like he said he researched from what he saw in the film, and that's why he got in touch with me, you know.
Yeah.
He gave me the year. He said the thing in the film was like 1971, da-da-da-da. And so he got in touch with me as of today. But – you know what? Interesting thing going on at that same time was we had like Salt Company, which was probably the most amazing coffee house. And it was there in Hollywood.
I remember that place. Yeah.
And it was run by the Hollywood Presbyterian Church. It was so beautifully done. I mean, the work that went into it, it was such a classy place. And you go up the stairs to the second floor, such great atmosphere. And you'd go there on Friday and Saturday nights to hear artists like Randy Stonehill, Larry Norman, you know, Dennis Akajanian, all these different groups, you know, they're Salt Company, and you bring your friends and you be served coffee or could buy coffee. I don't even think you had to buy coffee, just get coffee or whatever. And a lot of those people would bring their friends to get saved there, you know, like guys like Larry Norman, they'd sing several songs and then they'd preach the gospel, you know?
Right.
Yeah, it was powerful.
It seems like we're reliving the 70s, the late 60s, 70s all over again. The country's falling apart. All of a sudden, we have an Asbury revival.
And, I know.
And 2 weeks later, we have a movie that takes us back to the heyday of the Jesus movement. All of that was happening at the same time back then.
Pretty amazing. I've heard people say, oh, I bet so many fell away from the faith. You know what? I somehow have a feeling that more people from Calvary Chapel, that part of the Jesus movement stuck because there was a real emphasis from Chuck Smith of baptizing them into the faith. Yeah. And they didn't show this, but quite often, because of Chuck's teaching, there was a real cognizance of that you're bearing your old man, your old nature, you know?
Yes.
And there's even several stories of guys being baptized saying, oh, hold me down a long time because I've got a lot to bury. Now, they understood what baptism is all about because they said, hold me down because I got a lot to bury, my old man. Well, I believe that that's powerful. You know, in other words, they mentioned something symbolically in the film, but I really believe Chuck Smith saw baptism as not symbolic, but as a spiritual reality. And that's how he taught it. That's how at least a number of my several friends that I know who are baptized, that's exactly how they explained it, that they were told that when you go into the water, you're going to be burying your old man, your old nature, your old life.
I used to read about him, how he walked in Galilee, how he went down to the Jordan so John the Baptist he might see. When he rose out of the water, a dove descended from the sky. Then he said that those who loved him would have to come and die. Take me down to the river, or take me up to the sea. Let me die beneath those waters. Let me lose myself in thee. When I rise out of those waters, a brand new creature I shall be. When I rise out of those waters, resurrected and free. Let me die to all my sins, Lord. Let me die to yesterday. All the wrongs that I've committed, let the waters wash away. All my trouble pass behind me, buried neath the flowing tide. And the people all around me will know that I have die. So take me down to the river, or take me up to the sea. Let me die beneath those waters. Let me lose myself in thee. When I rise out of those waters, a brand new creature I shall be. When I rise out of those waters, resurrected and free, dead when I go beneath those waters, dead to sin and all its strife. When I rise out of those waters, resurrected to new life.
Did you ever go to those baptism services on the beach? Oh,
I did. I went several times. In fact, I had several slides from them, and you'd go there and it was just like they showed there, but you'd go there 1 month and there'd be camera crews from ABC and some other network. You go there another month, there'd be camera crews and everything from Sweden and Denmark and Germany, you know, I mean, all the time there'd be these camera crews from different news outlets from both the US as well as other countries.
Now, Dale, you went back to California after a period of time. You went to Vermont. That's how you and I met. But then right. after that, you went to Brockport, New York, I know.
Yeah. And then after a year there, because we just got married and we stayed for 1 year in Brockport after we were married. And then the Lord called us to go to back to Hope Chapel in Hermosa Beach, where I had ties with a number of people there, including the pastor. And Hope Chapel, again, was really right instrumental. It was part of the Jesus movement there. And just tons of young people in the South Bay area were coming to know the Lord through Hope Chapel.
So when you went back, that would have probably been, what, in the 80s, 1980s?
That was 1980. And Hope Chapel started in 1971.
Okay. Okay, my question is, people always like to say this about Asbury or anything that looks like a revival. Well, we don't know if it's going to last. What's it going to look like in 10, 15, 50 years from now? Did you see evidences of the fruit of that heyday of the Jesus movement 10 years later, 15 years later in California?
Yes. And let me tell you, interesting thing, people who say that, if they'll look at any of the churches that have significant growth, they'll find out that they'll notice that all those churches that have significant growth, they grew basically between the years of like 1975 or 74 to like 1986, 89, 90, that period of time. Where all these young people are coming to the Lord, and then they're starting to go to different churches,
right.
You know, and even in Vermont, we sent them like to three different churches: the Missionary Alliance and all Southern Baptist and the Assembly of God,
yes.
You know, and those churches all experienced growth just because of our sending them.
Yeah.
These disciples. Well, that same thing was happening in Southern California and all across the U.S. And most of these big churches have not experienced any significant growth since, I'd say, the year 2000. A lot of them, because they're great. And also is the confluence of the Catholic Charismatic Movement.
Yeah.
Again, Catholics getting saved, the Catholic Charismatic Movement, getting baptized in the Holy Spirit, and then leaving the Catholic Charismatic Movement to go to evangelical churches. And that also fostered this incredible growth in evangelical churches all across the U.S.
Right. Well, you and I met really because of Love Song. I wanted to just make mention of that. Love Song, which I had really enjoyed watching the little clips on in the movie. But the reason you and I met is that I felt a calling to move to New England, but I didn't know where. And Bud Simstrott and Carl Simstrott, we were going to go to New England to sing right. and to share, but we didn't know where. But Bud's brother, Wayne, had a Christian bookstore and wanted to sell Love Song records because we were hearing about this great band called Love Song, but they didn't have distribution all over the country. It was still sort of a California thing. And he got a Hollywood Free Paper in Indiana. And there was an ad there saying, you guys, his church in Burlington, Vermont, and you put there, we are the Eastern distributors of Love Song Records.
Yeah.
And it's because he found out about you, and it's a long, long story that we talk about in the other episodes we had together. But that was the reason. That opened up some communication, and we moved to Burlington and lived with you guys in a commune. I saw a picture of the house that you posted the other day, but it was a direct result of Love Song.
How about that? That's awesome.
Well, yeah. Dale, it's always great to talk to you. Any parting things you want to say or observations that you saw in the movie that we haven't talked about?
Just one last thought. That is, I don't see it as a if we have anything coming out of the Asbury. And let me tell you this, it's so interesting. The first Asbury revival, what was that, 71?
It was 70, and my 70. Life has totally changed because of that revival.
Well, I mean, interesting thing is my church, the same church that I was going to, the same church that brought me to Billy Graham Crusade, the same church that baptized me, was we had, as an outgrowth of Asbury, they sent a team from Asbury. And they came to our church on a Sunday morning, and we had a revival starting there at that time.
Well, that's what happened to me. A team came to Anderson, Indiana,
and how about that?
A revival broke out that lasted 50 days, three services a day. And in fact, I shared in the podcast last week my whole story about being totally revolutionized when a team from Asbury came. So they came out into your church in California.
They came to our church in California. How about that connection there? And I just go, hallelujah. Why does God choose Asbury? I mean, it's a Free Methodist church.
Yeah.
Or it was. The denomination is Free Methodist. And what is there about Asbury?
They had a big revival there in 1950. I think another one in probably the 1930s, about every 20 years, 70, and now. So
they have an openness to God.
I would like to know.
There's like this desire to want to obey God and do what God tells them to do, even at a chapel service.
And I would love to know about the founder of Asbury, because evidently God put his blessing on that school.
Yeah. It's so amazing.
Well, Dale, it's great talking to you, and I hope to come to Paducah one of these days. I sang in Paducah back 50 years ago.
In the
amphitheater looking over the river.
Okay, yep, still there.
The park. So, all right, tell your lovely wife, Renee, hello, and
I will.
Thanks for being on the show again.
Hey, my pleasure, and blessings to you and everyone else. And God is still moving by his Spirit. And anyone that will be open to receiving what God wants to do, God is moving, you know, powerfully.
I want to thank my friend Dale Yancey for sharing his firsthand account of what it was like to live during the period of time that is portrayed in the movie Jesus Revolution. I'm praying for a great national revival to come back. Also want to thank Brian Hoogenboom for his excellent engineering skills and editing skills. We want to close tonight's episode with a brand new song that I just finished writing about a week and a half or two ago. It's called To Rewrite History. Hope you'll listen to the words of it. And we hope you'll tune in and listen to us again next week. God bless.
If you had the power to rewrite history, would you go find some paper and pick up the pen? Are there chapters you would throw in the fire if you had the power to write them over again? Decisions that led to heartache, crossroads where you took the wrong turn. If you had the power to rewrite history, what would you change? What would we learn? We were all gathered at a large reunion after so many years of being apart. Most were smiling, but I could see the sadness in the eyes of some with broken hearts. Decisions that led to heartache, crossroads where they took the wrong turn. If they had the power to rewrite history, what would they change? What would we learn? Jesus died on the outskirts of town to give us a hope and a future and to lift us to higher ground.
there's no way you can rewrite history. You can never go back and relive it again. But there are chapters yet to be written. What will you write? How will the story end?